It's cheating on your taxes, hitting someone in anger, getting back at your enemy, and so much more. And so much less. The breadth and depth of sin is John MacArthur's focus today on Grace to You. As a renowned Bible teacher put it, a genuine Christian dreads sin. He will not say, "Is it not a little one?" For he knows that a little sin is like a small dose of a very potent poison, sufficient to destroy peace and comfort. So the question for you is this: are you flirting with what you think are insignificant little sins? Have you failed to recognize some attitudes and habits as the sins they are? How are you doing at recognizing the breadth and depth of sin? It's John MacArthur's emphasis on today's Grace to You as he continues the current study called Where Did Sin Begin? Based on the book of Genesis. For starters, mark your place at Genesis chapter 1, verse 31, and here's John MacArthur to begin the lesson.
It is accurate to say that absolutely everything wrong in our world is because of sin. If there were no sin, there would be nothing wrong. If there were no sin, everything would be very good. Everything created in the heavens, everything created on the earth would be very good as it was on day six. But because of sin, everything is very bad. From world wars, terrorism, mass murders, serial killings, plane crashes, auto accidents, fires, crippling and maiming of people through accidents, nuclear reactor disasters like Chernobyl, radiation poisoning, pollution, cancer, heart disease, all illnesses, to all broken relationships, all divorce, all orphaned children, all drugs, all crime, all dereliction in all forms, all confusion, all conflict, all struggle, all disappointment, all anxiety, all fear, all guilt, all depression, all sorrow, all failure, all remorse, as well as all lust and selfishness and pride and hatred and covetousness and rebellion and murder and stealing and sexual acts outside of marriage and irresponsibility and disobedience to parents. In a summary, all evil, all sadness, all failure, all death is because of sin. Now the question comes, what caused all of this? You go from a universe in chapter 1, verse 31, stated that God said he saw it all and it was very good, to a universe where nothing is very good. Everything is blighted. Everything is affected by decay and ultimately headed toward death. This is massive change. This is a wholesale alteration. This is a complete reversal. How does this all happen? And for that, I want you to turn back in Romans to chapter 5 and remind you of a verse that I read last week. Romans 5, verse 12. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men, because all sinned. Now, what this tells us is very simple. Sin entered the world through one man. And by that sin came death. And of course implied the decay that leads inevitably to death. 1 Corinthians 15:22 says it in even more brief and specific words, in Adam all die. Now listen. All death that exists in the universe can be traced back to one man. It can be traced back to one man, Adam. What Adam did in the garden, as recorded in Genesis chapter 3, what he did as his wife led him to do it, literally brought sin into this universe and with it brought death on the entire universe as God subjected it all to futility, brought it into slavery to corruption, and left it to groan and suffer until the day when he renews the earth, when he mitigates the curse, and finally, at the end of the millennial kingdom, when he uncreates the fallen creation and creates a new heaven and a new earth. The story of our world is the story of sin. That's really all you need to know. Now, go back with me to Genesis chapter 3. And I want to do a little exercise with you, and I just do this really for emphasis. You could probably do it yourself. But I want you to watch how this happens. As I read to you in Romans 5:12, when Adam went, we all went. Through the sin of one man, sin entered into the world, and with that sin came death. We all died. Everything died when Adam sinned. And so throughout all of human history, everything is bad. And if you question that, all you have to do is come out of chapter 3. Just come out of chapter 3. First in chapter 3, according to verse 7, they felt shame for the first time. Chapter 2 ends in verse 25, is the man and his wife were naked and were not ashamed. You know why they could be naked and not ashamed? Because he didn't have an evil thought about anything. There was not an evil thought in existence. Their thoughts were only pure and God-honoring and God-exalting, and their perspective was God's perspective. There was no ego. There was no I. They didn't view the world in any selfish manner. There was no perversion of any kind of thought. There was no such thing as an evil thought, and so there was no reason to be ashamed of nakedness. Full exposure on the part of man and woman without any shame, because there was no such thing as evil in their mind or in their actions. But all of a sudden in verse 7, chapter 3, their eyes are opened and they knew they were naked. All of a sudden they were having thoughts they'd never had before. All of a sudden they were thinking things they never thought before, and the paralyzing reality of wickedness caused them to be embarrassed, and so they covered themselves, and there is the first indication of evil thoughts. Evil thoughts. And then the next thing that comes, they wanted to hide from God. Verse 8, they try to hide themselves in the presence of the Lord God. Something's really different here. All of a sudden they have evil thoughts and they get embarrassed. They have to cover themselves and then they want to run from God. And they used to walk and talk with God in the cool of the day. And there was no reason to run from God because there was nothing to hide. There weren't any thoughts you wouldn't want God to know. There weren't any words you wouldn't want God to hear. There weren't any actions you wouldn't want God to see. And now all of a sudden they want to run from God and get away, and God has to come to find them. And then you follow along further in the chapter, and God confronts them about what they did, and Adam says, "The woman you gave me, she did it." Now you have blame shifting. He didn't, by the way, really blame Eve. He blamed God. He didn't say, "This woman." He said, "The woman you gave me." His point was, I went to sleep single. I woke up married. And frankly, God, you could have picked any woman you wanted. You picked her. That's not my call. So he's really blaming God. So now what you have a guilty conscience, you have feelings of shame, you have hiding from God, and then you have unwillingness to accept responsibility for one's sin, which shifts the blame not on another person, but on God himself. And says, "Well, God, if you hadn't made the world the way you made it, and you hadn't given me the woman you gave me, it wouldn't be like this. It's really your fault." And then God pronounces a curse on them. Cursed, verse 14. Cursed, verse 17. God cursed them. And the whole universe felt the curse. It was obvious the curse touched more than them. It touched the cattle. They were cursed more than the cattle. They were cursed more than every beast of the field, but that was talking to Satan. Satan would be cursed more than any other animal, but the animals would be cursed. And the woman would be cursed with pain in childbirth and with marital conflict. And the man would be cursed because the ground would be cursed. And so the ground would start bringing forth thorns and thistles, and it wouldn't be like it was in the paradise of Eden. And so you can see the curse begins to be felt everywhere. And we'll go into that in more detail in the future. And then you come to the end of chapter 3, and both of them are driven out of the garden because God had to protect them from eating the tree of life, lest they live forever in a cursed condition. That would really be an ultimate curse. Well, we don't know at what point between the sixth day and the seventh day of God's rest and the birth of their first child, Cain, we don't know where the fall came. We don't know how long they lived in the bliss of Eden. But in chapter 4, when they conceived a child, they had already fallen. That's very clear, because they brought forth sinful children who needed to make a sacrifice to God. You wouldn't need to make a sacrifice to God if you weren't a sinner and fallen. And then what you find in chapter 4 is murder, right? First crime recorded in the Bible, murder. Cain kills his brother Abel. Further down chapter 4, verse 19, Lamech took to himself two wives. Now you've got polygamy. You go down to verse 23. Lamech said to his wives, Ada and Zillah, listen to my voice, you wives of Lamech, give heed to my speech, for I have killed a man for wounding me. Here's murder out of vengeance. Here's a second murder, and we're still in the fourth chapter. After genealogy, go over to chapter 6. The genealogy indicates that years pass, and the years are listed in that genealogy, the book of the generations of Adam. You can read them yourselves. It tells how long they lived. And it says in chapter 6, verse 5, that the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. And the Lord said, I'll blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things to birds of the sky, for I'm sorry that I have made them. They were all feeling the curse. The whole of created life was feeling the curse. And God says, I'm just going to wipe it all out. Verse 11, now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God. The earth was filled with violence. And God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. I don't know how many times he needs to say corrupt, but he says it three times. Verse 13, God says to Noah, and Noah was a righteous man, verse 9 says. He was apparently, along with his sons and their wives, and his wife, the only righteous. God said, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them, and behold, I'm about to destroy them along with the earth. And he did in the flood. He destroyed them, and he literally destroyed the earth in the sense that he reshaped it. This, frankly, tells us, and I think the Bible's most penetrating descriptions of the extent of man's sin is found here in chapter 6. If you want to know how bad it was, and how bad it was very fast, all you need to do is read that the Lord saw, verse 5, that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every imagination or intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That's a very comprehensive statement. To the degree that God was sorry he had made man on the earth, grieved in his heart, he said, I'm going to blot them out. And down in verse 11 and 12, as I read, corrupt, corrupt, corrupt. This, again, is the Bible's most penetrating description of the extent of man's sin, and it's in the primeval period. And it frankly shows us no progress. It isn't that God created man and he's been getting better. God created man and he instantly got worse, and he keeps getting worse. There are seven elements to this description. Let me just hit them for you. In seven major ways, sin is indicated in its extent, first of all, on the earth. It was literally worldwide. Verse 6, the Lord was sorry he'd made man on the earth. In verse 7, he's going to blot them all out over the whole earth. Verse 12, God looked on the earth and it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. So first of all, the extent of this sin was in the whole earth. Secondly, the inwardness of this sin. It was systemic, it was endemic, it was inside man, as indicated by verse 5, every intent, all the imaginations, that is the thoughts, all the intent or imagination of the thoughts of his heart. The extent of sin, the whole earth. the inwardness of sin down to the very thoughts. And it even goes deeper into the very nature of man in the forming of those thoughts. Not just the thoughts, but the intent of those thoughts. You're getting behind it. We could say even the motivation of man is corrupt. The whole earth is corrupt. The thinking of man is corrupt. His mind is corrupt. And his deep motivations are corrupt. And then he talks about the absolutely exclusive character of this sin. In verse 5, he says, it was only evil continually. Man's behavior was exclusively evil. Exclusively evil. And it was exclusively evil, number 5, continually. Continually. So you see the sin in its extent, you see it in its inwardness, in the thought patterns, and you see it in its motivation down at the very intent level, and you see it in its exclusiveness, its only sin, and you see it in its continuousness, its continuously sin. And then in its inclusiveness, he says down in verse 12, all flesh had corrupted their way. All flesh. All flesh. If you look over to chapter 8, verse 21, you have a repeat of a statement with a little bit of a difference. Middle of verse 21, the intent of man's heart is evil from his youth. This indicates the earliness of sin from the very start of life. So you really see, this is a very elaborate description of depravity. This is a very elaborate, careful description of the sweeping condemnation of man. And we're in chapter 6 of Genesis. And it's this bad, so bad, that God drowns the entire planet except for 8 people in the worldwide flood. Look at chapter 7, verse 23. This will show you how bad it was. Thus he blotted out every living thing that was upon the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky. And they were blotted out from the earth, and only Noah was left together with those that were with him in the ark. God literally obliterated the planet, with the exception of the animals that were on the ark and the 8 in the family of Noah. If you follow the story into chapter 9, Noah and his family finally saw the water subside. So Noah is given a new commission, the same commission Adam and Eve were given. Chapter 9, verse 1. All right, Noah, you and your family, go out, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth again. Let's try this a second time, guys. And you can rule the animals, he tells them in verse 2, the fear of you, the terror of you shall be on every beast of the earth, on every bird of the sky, with everything that creeps on the ground, all the fish of the sea, into your hands they are given. And what he's saying there is you can kill anything you want. That's right, you can kill anything you want. Every moving thing, verse 3, that is alive shall be food for you. So he says, go out and do what I originally gave Adam and Eve the right to do, and that is to rule over the creation, though initially before the fall they weren't to kill the animals. There was no such thing as death because there was no such thing as sin. Now they can actually kill the animals that have been provided for them. Be fruitful, multiply. Let's do this again. By the time you get to the end of the chapter, you have a terrible situation, absolutely terrible situation. Noah is drunk. And he's exposed in some prurient sexual way. And a curse is pronounced on his son because they saw his father's nakedness in his drunkenness. He was drunk and he was naked in some lewd manner. And here you have the first sexual sin. You have some more genealogy in chapter 10, then you come to chapter 11, and you go to verse 7, and you have strife. Strife is initiated here in the confusion of languages. You come to chapter 12, in verses 10 to 20, and you have lying. Abram lies about his wife Sarah, says she's not his wife, tells a a lie because he doesn't trust God, tells Pharaoh that Sarah is his sister. Chapter 13, you have strife in verse 7 between Abram's flocks and Lot's. In the 13th verse of the 13th chapter, it says of Sodom, the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. So Sodom, we know what the sin was. What was it? It was a sin of homosexuality, and I'm sure all kinds of other attendant sins. In chapter 14, you have the first war. In chapter 16, verse 4, you have adultery, Abraham with Hagar producing a son. In chapter 18 and verse 20, the Lord says again, the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great, and their sin is exceedingly grave. Things are getting worse. Chapter 19, the whole ugly, sordid, bizarre homosexual activity. The end of chapter 19, by the way, the homosexuals tried to even rape the angels who came down in the 19th chapter of Genesis. You come to the end of that chapter, and you have Lot committing incest with his two daughters. You come into chapter 20, and you have lying again. You come into chapter 21, and you have cruelty toward Hagar and Ishmael. You come into chapter 22, verse 24, and you have the first concubine. That's a sex slave in today's vernacular. Come into chapter 26, and you have famine. You have lying also in chapter 26. I won't go into the detail, but Isaac followed the pattern of his father Abraham and lied about his wife as his father had lied. You come to chapter 26, and you have the terrible quarreling that goes on, indicated in chapter 26, verse 18 to 22, quarreling about wells. Come to chapter 27, you have deception. It just goes on like that. I could do this for another hour. But let me just run it by you fast. 29, treachery, deception. Chapter 30, anger. Chapter 30, adultery. Chapter 30, polygamy. Chapter 31, deception. Chapter 31, theft. Chapter 31, idolatry. Chapter 31, anger. Chapter 31, implacability or unwilling to bend. Chapter 32, hatred. Chapter 34, rape. Chapter 34, mass murder. Chapter 34, looting. Chapter 35, idolatry. Chapter 37, selling someone into slavery, betrayal. Chapter 37, harlotry and incest. And so it goes. Now, wouldn't you say something dramatically had changed from the statement, and God saw everything He'd made and it was all very good? Yeah. Something changed is right. And what changed is recorded in Genesis chapter 3. What changed is that sin came into the picture and polluted everything. And with it came death. By one man, sin entered the world, and death passed to all men because all have sinned.
That's John MacArthur showing you the breadth and depth of your sin today as he's continued the series called Where Did Sin Begin? Along with being the featured teacher here on Grace to You, John MacArthur is president of the Master's College and Seminary. And John, we've mentioned this series is an outworking of your broader study on origins, your study from the book of Genesis. If you can pin it down, tell our listeners how your study of the first few chapters of Genesis changed or shaped your view of God. What impact did this study have on you personally?
Carl, the series I did on Genesis had a very profound effect on me. First of all, it's the hardest thing I ever did. Because, it's one thing to go through the text of Genesis, and I can do that, and I've been trained to do that. But when you start to compare the Genesis creation account with modern-day pseudoscience and evolution, that's a whole different matter. I had to bone up on science and false science and true science, and wade through all kinds of scientific jargon and chapters and journal articles trying to understand what was going on in the great debate over creation and evolution. When it was all said and done, out of that came the book, The Battle for the Beginning. And the book is really just maybe a tenth of what came out in the CD version, all the sermons I preached for months and months on the opening chapters of Genesis were condensed into the book. But the book has the best of it, the salient material on the battle for the beginning. It examines what Scripture teaches about the origin of the universe and man's fall. It explains why the Genesis 1 account of creation is hated and attacked. It gives you a step-by-step analysis of what happened on each day of creation and why we can be certain they were actual days, that the whole universe was made in 6 actual days. There are all kinds of moral ramifications of biblical creationism and implications as to the truthfulness of Scripture. This is a great book. You need to read this book. We have it available, The Battle for the Beginning.
Have you found yourself engaged in a creation-evolution debate and in need of a clear biblical explanation of the issues? That's what you'll find in John's book called The Battle for the Beginning. Call today to order your copy. The cost is $11 in soft cover. Shipping is free. Order by phone. Call the toll-free number anytime, 1-800-55-GRACE, or go to the website gty.org. Again, ask for the title, The Battle for the Beginning. Now, friend, let me take this moment to tell you how you can play a vital role in this ministry here at Grace to You. When you give financially, you take part in bringing verse-by-verse Bible teaching to listeners across the globe. Really, it's a way for you to be a missionary. If you've never been to New Zealand, well, Grace to You is there. How about Spain? Gracias a vosotros is our Spanish broadcast. It was just added to several news stations in Spain. And we're able to bring God's truth to folks in these places and elsewhere because listeners like you give so generously. So send your support today to Grace to You, Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. Or reach us by phone at 1-800-55-GRACE. And now for John MacArthur, we thank you for tuning in today. Please be back tomorrow. Don't forget, too, that Grace to You is seen on television Sundays on DirecTV Channel 378. Or you can watch the program online at gty.org. And then join us here tomorrow as John brings 30 minutes of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You. Left untreated, a cut from a rusty nail can kill you, and the smallest sin can destroy you if you're not properly dealing with it. A point that John MacArthur will consider tomorrow on the next Grace to You.